keep America great.
I know a predator when I see one.
They want to defund the police.
I will draw on the best of us.
Republicans reject science.
Four years of...
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by John Paul Moran, who is the Republican candidate for Massachusetts' 6th Congressional District. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So the first question that I'd like to ask is, what made you decide to stand as a Republican candidate for Massachusetts?
Well, I could never be a socialist, so the Democrat Party would never be in consideration for me. I believe in liberty, unity, and opportunity for all. I consider today's Democrat Party very different from the John F. Kennedy Party of years ago. I might even be a Democrat if John F. Kennedy wasn't assassinated, his legacy continued. But unfortunately, it's taken a very hard left turn. And in America, left means radical socialism, basically. So I decided to run because it's the idea is, if not me, who, and if not now, when? I'm a small business owner, former one-time MIT scientist. I designed a space telescope at MIT Lincoln Laboratory here in Massachusetts for the U.S. Air Force. And I've run a number of businesses, including a surfing brand. We had surfing videos being filmed in Australia. And I'm so a very, very a small business owner, very entrepreneurial. And I saw the terrible things going on in Washington, in my state, in my district, in my country, from inept, terrible leadership. And I said, you know what, enough to sitting and watching and complaining, I'm going to run and help fix things.
How much do you think your particular brand of Republicanism is reflected by President Trump? Would you say that you're on the same sort of like wavelength in terms of Republicanism, or are there any sort of like differences between his idea of the Republican Party and yourself and yours?
Well, that's a big question. It's definitely a combination. I always say policy before personality. So while I may be from New Jersey and Trump is from New York, and there's a certain amount of fast talking and fast moving in business, like I'm a small business owner, I'm not worth billions like Donald Trump was when he came to office. But I think, you know, my personality is very different. I would never talk the way he does. I don't like the way he talks. I don't like the way he gets in arguments and fires off tweets to people that are nobodies compared to the president of the United States. I think that's crazy. And I don't like all of his policies. I'm gay, and I think he's got a 50-50 mix on his record of gay LGBTQ rights. So there's a number of things that I don't align with. However, on the big picture, his idea of a kind of America first, every country should be their country first. It's common sense. You have a house, you have a family, you put your own family before others. It's just human nature, right? So I think you should be proud of your own country, and you should... I believe in free markets. I don't believe in dictator economics like the Democrats. I believe in Donald Trump's version of securing our borders. I believe in Donald Trump's version of, President Donald Trump's version of a number of things when it comes to, you know, education, educational choice. There's so many things that I do align with. There's far more things I align with President Trump than with the Democrats. However, I'm not what's called a Trump acolyte. I don't say everything he does I follow. I will disagree when I disagree. I already disagree on a number of things, especially gay rights. I will be loud and clear about that.
Now, you mentioned obviously how you feel about the Democratic Party in the United States. Why do you think at the moment Joe Biden is leading President Trump in not just national polls, but polls in states, in some swing states in particular?
I think those polls are false. I don't think there's any way our country will elect a man who doesn't come out of his basement, who's got clearly the signs of dementia. He doesn't know what he ate for breakfast. He doesn't know where he is. He can't make it through a full sentence without a teleprompter. The man is an empty shell, and he's a very, very dangerous empty shell. And what Democrats are playing is this. It's not on politics. I know how it works. There's different ways you can play it. They're playing 100% make Donald Trump toxic. and then they'll vote for Joe Biden. But there's no enthusiasm for Joe Biden at all. Their whole game is they own the media. They own 80, 90% of the media. They own 90% plus of college professors. They own Hollywood. They own sports. They feel like they can push their agenda so hard, right or wrong, that people will just vote for Biden, who is the worst potential presidential candidate in U.S. history, bar none. And then his second is Kamala Harris, who's just as bad as he is. Awful. I mean, open borders, socialism, race riots. They're pushing racial division. It's just they're the worst candidates in the history of our country. But the far left has taken control of the Democrat Party, and it's very, very far left radical party. And they're just hoping that people will hate Donald Trump so much that they'll vote for their crazy crackpot team of Biden Harris.
So, I mean, you mentioned Vice President Biden, some of his the issues that people have raised about his cognition and his ability to communicate. How do you think that that will impact on the debates?
Well, I can't wait till the debates, because I don't know how Joe Biden, I mean, you've heard the story that in any kind of, the guy is out. I mean, he doesn't do talk. He had 9 days so far in the past couple of weeks where he pulled out of getting out in public. He never talks to reporters directly. The reporters are on his side, so they give him very softball questions when they do. His cognitive ability is gone. You can't run the free world with your finger on the nuclear button, right? With a guy who's mentally incapacitated, on top of being a far left radical, he's mentally incapacitated. So I just can't wait to see that, because I think the people will see the truth and they'll say, you know what? I'll hold my nose if I don't like Donald Trump's personality. But if you look at the policies, the reason why they're not talking, because their policies are horrendous. That's why Seth Moulton, my competitor, won't debate me, because no sane, rational person would say, I want communism that killed 150 million people last century, not free markets that made America great. I want wide open borders on like every place in the world, right? And let people come in that might want to do damage, terrorism, disease, MS-13 gangs, right? No rational person wants all of those terrible things that Democrats are talking about. So they keep their mouths shut, and they think by hiding, they do better in the polls. As soon as they open their mouths, they go down in the polls. That tells you something.
You mentioned, obviously, the vast amounts of people who've died from communism. Of course, a lot of people have also died in the United States from coronavirus. I think it's about 200,000 plus at the moment.
Well, no, that's not correct. No, that's not correct. 94% of people had 2.5 comorbidities, and the average age was 82. So it's something called every life is precious, but it's more of a death accelerator. It's not, there's a big difference between being 82 with 2.5 on average comorbidities. It means you're dying from almost three things already. And then coronavirus is horrendous, and it does accelerate it may be a factor, but if you look at the total numbers of people that died in our country, from last year to this year, it's nearly the same. It's not as bad as they're saying it is, because only 6% died only from coronavirus, which is a very low number. So you have to understand there's a difference between dying with comorbidities and dying as a healthy young adult. You're more likely to die from pneumonia or the flu than you are from coronavirus if you're young and healthy. So that's fake news. I mean, it's bad people dying, but it's not the same thing as a young person dying from the flu.
Just on that issue, even leaving the amount of people who have died aside, how do you think he has dealt with it? Because obviously there has been criticism relating both to the amount of people who have died, whether you're saying it's solely because of that or other issues, and to the amount of people who have tested positive. How do you think he's handled it?
Spectacularly. I'll say this. The reality is that in America, the states have ultimate rule over the governors. The people out of our country don't understand the president of the United States does not have full domain of our country. You see different states doing different things. You look at Sweden and you look at Taiwan. They had, I believe, they had no very 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 low death rates. They didn't shut down any of their businesses or schools. They were smart with securing people that were older and sick that were vulnerable. Not in the beginning. Sweden had some problems with that in the very beginning. But then they got it down. So when you look at it, in our country, I think their challenges were that we had 50 different governors doing 50 different things. I think what could have been better is if everybody started wearing masks earlier and socially distanced a little bit earlier, and we might not have needed to even shut down our businesses. But what happened is they kept the businesses down, shut down so long that I think the deaths from the shutdown are going to, there's lots of evidence that the deaths from the shutdown are going to far exceed the deaths from coronavirus for a whole bunch of reasons. Diseases that weren't taken care of, alcoholism, suicides, people out of work. There's just so much. There's going to be so much more dead. So I believe, if anything, I would have liked to see President Trump be more aggressive about trying to keep the economy open, but safeguarding the vulnerable and not going after like Governor Cuomo, who probably should be arrested for war crime, you know, for human rights crime, the way he stuffed people in nursing homes, the sick people in nursing homes, and basically killed off, I don't know, 10,000 people in the nursing homes, and did and was more obsessed about young people, you know, putting masks on outside. I mean, the priorities were completely messed up. But going back to what President Trump did, he stopped travel from China early on, and everybody called him a racist for it. So no, he did a lot of good things. I think I disagree with some of the things he did. I think he could have reacted faster in some ways, but you can't put it all on Trump because ultimately the governors are the ones making those decisions. The president didn't have a lot to do with those decisions about the shutdowns.
Do you think that the way that coronavirus has been implemented at the social distancing and coronavirus safety measures, do you think they've been implemented well at the president's rallies, or do you think that there could be more emphasis on ensuring that there is social distancing and people wearing face masks at his rallies?
Well, this is the bottom line of this, okay? The left, this is how bad the media is. They will go and have people grabbed by the thousands for Black Lives Matter and Antifa peaceful protests. I forget the number, but a majority of these protests did include violence. It's a lie to say they're all peaceful protests. They are funded. There's funding from far left groups funding these, you know, have piles of bricks show up at these things. Oh, come on. Like we all know, all Americans know that these things are, this is orchestrated by the Democrat Party, by the Joe Biden supporters, and to get Trump out, to make the country look chaotic. And it's okay for them to go and riot, loot, and even kill and shoot cops and everything. But that's okay because that's a march for freedom, according to Seth Moulton, my competitor. So people have no right to criticize a Trump rally when the left authorizes, sanctions, and promotes riots in the streets with thousands of people. So it's just nonsense. The other thing is they test. I went to one event because as a guest, and they check your temperature. They make sure they ask you to wear a mask. They tell people to socially distance. They kept everybody, when I went, they kept everybody, you know, far apart from each other. And so I think they're following reasonable guidelines, and people are adults. And if you're sick, don't go. And if you are sick, you know, you're taking your own life in your own hands, and if you want to go. But again, if you look at the deaths from car crashes and pneumonia and the flu and all these other things, it's, you have a more, better chance of falling down the steps and dying than getting coronavirus and dying if you're under the age of 60 without any sicknesses. So people have to calm down. I think they're fretting about it over you know. Then there's the whole thing with your herd immunity. And I think Sweden's getting to herd immunity. They didn't shut anything down. It might be the old-fashioned way of getting to herd immunity is not a bad idea. I think there is some merit to that as long as you're protecting the elderly and the people that are vulnerable. I'm fine with it as long as people are going voluntarily, they're taking temperatures, and they're telling people to wear masks. If they don't, that's up to them.
Yeah. Now, one of the other issues that has been linked with President Trump and is something that will be coming towards a resolution soon is Brexit, Britain leaving the European Union. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think if President Trump is re-elected that he will work well with Britain outside of the European Union, work well to have a strong free trade agreement, or do you think that that's not something that is necessarily a priority for him?
Well, I think he's got a lot of priorities right now, which is staying elected. The reality is, as I tell people, you may not like President Trump's personality or some of his policies, but my God, you look at you look at 50 priorities that President Trump has: lowering taxes, increasing business, getting jobs back from our enemies overseas, right? A communist China caused the virus. Yes, we should bring our manufacturing back all we can. The Democrats are licking the boots of the communist Chinese. They won't criticize them. That's insanity. I mean, who has a competitor that unleashes a deadly disease on your country, no matter what? If they didn't cause it intentionally, which they may or may not have, they definitely kept their mouth shut for weeks longer than they should have. There's estimates that 95% of the deaths worldwide would have been prevented if they were honest early on. So anyway, when you look at the big picture and then the Trump working with Great Britain, I think he will. He's tight with the government there. He's a fan of Brexit. And I think for sure that's going to be a priority of President Trump. I'm sure it is.
Now, one of the things that may be somewhat of a difficulty in regard to this is a bill going through the House of Commons at the moment, the UK House of Commons at the moment, which is an internal market bill, which the European Union is claiming will harm the Good Friday Agreement, which, of course, the United States is a signatory to. And both President Trump and the Democrats have said that Great Britain, you know, shouldn't do anything to endanger the Good Friday Agreement. Do you think even if Britain does something that may endanger the Good Friday Agreement, that President Trump may still want to work with Great Britain? Or do you think that that may give him pause for thought and, you know, it might change the situation in regards to a free trade agreement?
Well, I mean, if they back off of the Good Friday Accords, then I think that he should resist it and challenge it. So I would think that's going to affect it. I mean, whether it's going to change, what's going to change, I'm not sure. But I would think, you know, both parties are talking about that, both the Communist Party. And honestly, I think we have the American Party and the Socialist Party in America. I think we shouldn't call them Democrat and Republican anymore. I call it the Opportunity Party. I'm the Grand Opportunity Party. I think we should call the Republicans. Democrat Party, which is just called the Anti-American Socialist Party. But anyway, I think on your question, I think he probably will resist it. What he's going to do, I don't know. I mean, I hope no matter what, we work with Great Britain and have a great trade agreement with them, with that country, you know, for sure.
Now, you mentioned, and I think it's a phrase that you've used before, that the GOP shouldn't be the grand old party, but the Grand Opportunity Party. As part of your campaign for Congress, how are you focusing on the issue of opportunity? And what do you think you can offer the electorate of Massachusetts in terms of opportunity?
Well, this is the thing. I think every government, especially most importantly, the American government, ought to offer opportunity as its primary goal, because people don't just want to be animals in cages. You know, socialists, these crazy wing nuts here in our country, are just obsessed with equality, equality, equality. I believe in equality at the starting line of a race. I don't believe in forced equality at the finish line. Democrats here and socialists are angry if someone's doing better than anybody else, if someone's more skilled than anybody else, if someone's taller or shorter, whiter or darker. They want everybody a gray-looking person, the same height, the same... No diversity. They're the anti-diversity party because they want everything the same. And that's not humanity. Humanity is striving to do better. And people come to America and they want, you've heard, the land of opportunity, right? That's what we used to be. And that's what I'd like us to stay. So I believe in opportunity is the message. So I've got behind me in my podium, you see a 5-point star. And I actually detailed out, this is a logo, the star is an O for opportunity, and the 5 points star stand for personal opportunity, which is constitutional rights and freedoms. Without that, you have nothing. If you don't have your freedoms, game over. I mean, you have nothing, right? Mm. So from there, economic opportunity, free market capitalism, not socialism, dictator economics, social opportunity. So social opportunity is a hand up, not a handout for life like the Democrats do, keeping people dependent on government, as well as things like gay rights. I'm all for that and finding a way to balance that with religious rights. And educational opportunity. Once again, the Democrats are on the wrong side on this. They want to keep kids in failing schools because the teachers unions that are Marxist, leftist, and they want to keep the kids in failing schools. Free markets mean if your school's failing, you bring your kid out to a better school. Your life and your education shouldn't be determined by your zip code, right? Mm. So for educational choice, the national opportunity is things like protecting your borders, having a strong military so your country survives, and having police that you trust and you fund to keep you and your family safe, your community, your business, your family safe from from robbing and killing and murder, right? And rape. And the Democrats are against that. They want to defund the police and fund leftist groups that are burning our cities to the ground. So I'm for, you know, the 5 points of opportunity. People love my story. Young people, people of all backgrounds love the idea of government should be providing opportunity. And it shouldn't be doing things outside of that. It shouldn't be getting into controlling every aspect of your life or, you know, taxing you to death and redistributing your hard-earned money to people that didn't earn it. They shouldn't be dictating what you learn in school. They shouldn't be dictating, you know, how you live or what words you're allowed to say or not say. So I believe America was, it's the opposite of America. The Democrats are really trying to take America and turn it inside out and make it not America anymore. They want to take all the things that made America great and destroy it. So I'm for opportunity, and that's my message, is opportunity for all, depending on, regardless of background, age, lifestyle, gender. I'm very, very diverse in my beliefs, but I don't believe that people that are diverse that come here want to live in a socialist country with no freedoms or rights.
If you are elected to Congress, how do you think that you would be able to achieve these particular things? I mean, have you got in mind any particular bills that you might want to put forward, or any sort of amendments to the law that you think would be positive things to amend?
Yes. So my first 100 days, I want to do more than Joe Biden did in 47 years, or that Seth Moulton did in 6 years, or would do in 47 more years. I don't find any ingenuity or creativity or innovation in Congress today, especially on the left. I just see more bills to control and tax, control, tax, and take away your rights. That's what the Democrats want to do. I want to give people freedom to innovate. And so I have three things I want to do. Number one, I want to create the first Defensive Small Business Council. We have 20 to 30% of small businesses are destroyed and shut down for good in our country because of overarching extreme shutdowns. And when you look at almost 50% of the people that work in our country work for small businesses, okay? It's insane how many people, with lifetimes, family restaurants, people have spent decades building their businesses, gone forever because some bureaucrat thinks that you can't sit people at a bar, but you can sit them outside. I mean, there's a lot of decisions that were made on the staff based on no science and destroyed businesses. So I believe we need to protect businesses, small businesses, and I want to form a coalition. Because the big businesses like Amazon Target and supermarkets, they did fine, right? They did better than ever. Target stores, others, small businesses went out of business. It's not fair because the big businesses have lobbying power, smalls don't. So I'm going to create this coalition, and 50% of Americans will be part of this coalition. So that's number one. And the number two thing I'm going to create. Did you ever hear of the Peace Corps?
Yeah, of course.
So the U.S. Opportunity Corps. The U.S. Opportunity Corps will be basically a Peace Corps for America with educational and career tracks for young people. A two-year program after high school partly modeled after the great German system of apprenticeships. Over 400,000 businesses are involved there. They've got the world-class system for having young people after high school getting apprenticeships and getting into careers in the trades. That's one. Another one would be a pre-college track because to kind of learn before you buy, you know, try before you buy, right? Get some apprenticeships in technology fields or medicine or some whatever field you want to go to spend money on to go to school, because it's hundreds of thousands of dollars a day to go to school. You can't do that and then go to college and say, I don't like my job, and then start working at Starbucks, right?
Yeah.
So that's the second thing. The third would be a social good track. And all of this would be funded by private business, combination of private and business and local municipalities. And it would provide a real opportunity for everybody. It'd be a great leveler, no matter where you're from, no matter what background you have. You can get into the Opportunity Corps, serve your country in some civic fashion, as well as get a career track. Everybody I talk to, Democrats, Republicans alike, love it. The third thing is I'm going to produce the Opportunity for All Act. I am a very rare person. I'll be the very first open gay Republican on the federal level in the history of the United States. Never happened before. Never once did a gay, open gay Republican get into Congress. There's been a couple of times they came out after, that doesn't count because they came in straight. So I'll be the first ever. And I'm also a faithful Catholic. Don't miss church on Sundays. My family is very Catholic and I believe in the faith, and very pro-American and Republican. When you put all that together, I'm the guy that can figure out how to make gay rights and religious rights work together because I'm a living example of it. So I'll make it happen. Three pages maximum. It's not going to be mine. And I'll do it, and I'll do all those things in the first 100 days, especially if we have a Republican Congress. Without a Republican Congress, the Democrats will fight tooth and nail on every one of these things. But every one of these things, I'm going to get vast majority support of American people regardless of party. So what do you think? I'm going to go there and kick some butt.
Well, one of the just to turn away from that for a sec, one of the things that is also looming over the presidential election at the moment is the Supreme Court is President Trump nominating a replacement for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He's going to announce that tomorrow. We're recording on Friday. He's going to announce that on Saturday. What are your thoughts on potential picks? Do you have any names floating about that you think would be a good choice?
Well, I can tell you one thing. I considered, I thought, well, if I run for Congress, do I want to think about a Senate run, or would I want to work for the House of Representatives? 100% House of Representatives. I want to serve the people, my local people here in my 6th district. It's a very different job, really, than running, being in the Senate, which I respect immensely, but a very different job. One of my jobs is nothing to do with the Supreme Court. That's a thing that the Senate deals with and the president deals with. So my simple answer to that is that's sort of not my bailiwick. That's not in my wheelhouse. So as long as the president follows the Constitution that's worked for us for almost 250 years, and then let's stick with the law and follow the Constitution. All of the hand-wringing by the Democrats is insane because they were talking about 4 years ago when there was something, where Barack Obama didn't get someone confirmed. The difference is that they had the White House, they didn't have the Senate. And throughout history, whenever the president and the Senate are about in the same party, they always get that person approved. Always. So the media is being very coy about this, not comparing apples to apples, because we have the White House and the Senate. We don't have the House of Representatives. So the Republicans can do this, and they should do this. This is an obligation by the Constitution to do this and to get a vote. He has to do it. And number two, 8 people on the Supreme Court, where we know there's a decent chance we're going to go to a battle over this election because of all the voter fraud that we know is going to happen with the mail-in ballots. You can't have a chance of a split Supreme Court decision. We'll have a constitutional crisis. We need the tiebreaker. So I think when you put it all together, having a woman, that's great. I'm not into identity politics, but I think we do need more representation of women, like we do need more representation of gay people in politics and business owners in politics and even scientists in politics. There's very, very few of them. Hence all the stupid decisions by politicians that aren't scientists making science decisions on the coronavirus. I think it's great that he's picking a woman, and I think the Democrats are already accepting that they're not going to win this battle. We just have to move on, The concern, though, is this is the biggest concern, much, 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 much more so than Trump picking this Ruth Bader Ginsburg's successor, is the fact that the left has said right now that they want to pack the Supreme Court, which means even most people consider that very unfair. You don't win an election, now you're going to add judges to get your way. That's never been done in America. That's what banana republicans do. That's what Chavez did in Venezuela, and we took it over and turned it into a communist hellhole. Okay? That's a very dangerous thing to be talking about. Killing the filibuster, adding states to the union, making it so that Republicans never win another seat in the history of our country. That's what's going to happen, which means we'll be a one-party country, which is definite disaster. It's definite Hugo Chavez, communist China, USSR, all over that, and that must be stopped. So people have to be looking at the fact that the rich, and then they say they're going to burn cities down. They're saying top Democrats are saying we're going to blow up the system and burn it down. We can't let those people get near power. There's no way that people say we don't get our way. We're going to stuff the Supreme Court. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to burn the system down. We're going to riot. Those people, that's like thuggery. That's like Nazi brown shirts. We can't allow that in our country. So if there's any reason to not vote Democrat, that's probably number one. They have to be stopped. They're very dangerous.
We're coming towards the end of the podcast. It's been great to have you on, John. And I've got one final question for you. Now, obviously, because of the virus. We've not been able to do a number of things that, you know, we normally would be able to do in more normal times. So my final question to you is, because of that, what one thing have you missed doing that normally you would be able to do and you look for looking forward to being able to do again?
Well, I haven't done a lot of air travel because of all this. I don't want to deal with the headaches and the wearing a mask for hours in your face and sitting through the airports and going through long. I want to be able to travel more. I can say that, you know, the bars have been closed, but I'm sitting at my bar at my home. I have a nice big bar. I'm Irish, so we have bars at our houses. So I don't miss the bar because I have one. I have a gym in my house, so I don't miss the gym because I have one here. But I think I miss that because, you know, we've been able to go to church. I've been able to travel to see family. And really, I'm looking forward to getting back to normal and being able to travel, I guess, again. And I wish I can go back in time and stop mail-in voting because it's the way the Democrats have rammed this through. It's just going to be replete with all kinds of fraud. And, you know, there's going to be y'all lawsuits and everybody that loses their election, they're going to sue no matter which side it's on. I think it was a terrible idea. I think they should cancel the whole idea of mail-in voting in our country and say it's out. There's too much. They're already finding fraud and say, just go to the polls. You can go to the pharmacy. You can go to the store. You can go to the bar. You can go buy alcohol. You can go in line and socially distance the mask on and vote. And I think they should just scrap the whole mail-in voting thing because we're going to have a huge crisis in our hands. So I guess I'd say I miss the pre-COVID situation where we can actually have regular voting because I know we're in for a real disaster. So that being said, I appreciate your time and I hope I'm a very different perspective and a very different candidate probably than most you see in America. I can probably assure you of that.
Yeah, no, I definitely think you are, John. If people want to find out more about your campaign, where can they go to find out?
Sure. You can go to johnpaulmoran.com. That's John Paul, like my favorite Pope, John Paul II, or John Paul Jones, hero of the Revolutionary War here in America. John Paul Moran, MORAN.com. We can certainly use help. I'm sure your viewers are not here in my backyard, probably many of them. So we need volunteers and we also need donations, but you can't donate if you're from overseas. You know, if people want to learn more about my mission, though, I believe my mission of opportunity for all, there should be an opportunity party in every country. Every free country should have an opportunity party. That's what the mission of government should be. And it's quite the opposite from these globalist, controlitarian, you know, the globalism and these people that want to enforce leftist ideas and socialism and control. It's really creepy and it's not it's not free and it's not opportunity. So I'm hoping the opportunity movement wins in the war of ideas versus this whole leftist globalist thing that we have to stop around the world, not just in America.
Thanks once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.